Your job is to disappoint as many people as humanly possible so that you never disappoint yourself.
Oh, God.
Learning lots, learning lots. Bree and Jesse are learning lots. They'll learn so much, their heads will grow. There won't be anything they don't know. They'll make Einstein look like a stupid schmo. And you can learn lots too with Bree and Jesse.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Bree,
and we're learning lots.
Boy, did we learn a lot from the last episode.
We sure did.
Basically, that we were serious ladies.
Very serious ladies.
So we thought we'd lighten it up with a little topic called truth. What is it,
Jesse?
Well,
I think truth is interesting because there's like there are different truths to me. There's facts and there's feelings. So like there are things that you feel that are an absolute truth for you. And I feel like those things change over your life, or that's what we're starting to accept and realize. You can have an idea of who you are when you're 19 years old. And it would be weird if that was still your idea of who you are when you're 30.
Well, is it that truths are changing, or is it that they were just beliefs that we have with experience and with time dispelled?
Ooh.
I don't know, which is why we're here and why we have two guests that are much smarter than us.
Yes, that's the goal of this entire podcast, is to just keep bringing people on where I'm like, I'm excited to interview you, but I know whatever you say, I'm going to learn from.
Yes. Truth is obviously a hot topic. I feel like we could do an entire season on truth. So I just want to say, you know, we are getting into certain angles of this, but we are learning as we go that we could just keep bringing in experts and friends in on some of these topics. So just know, like, we're very well aware that we're not able to completely wrap our arms around any one topic in one episode.
Right. Constantly like reevaluating truth is really fascinating to me.
It is very cool. And I wonder if it's comforting.
Oh yeah, great point.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something that feels really good about like, okay, I can count on that. That's true.
Yeah. And then in terms of feelings, I think in my experience, they're way scarier than facts. Realizing that there's something that you hold true about yourself, and then years later recognizing that's no longer who you are.
Yeah.
Which I love. And something I've watched Miley Cyrus do many times. And I love about her is that she says, you know, I may have said something yesterday, but that was who I was yesterday. And I'm going to keep evolving. And if that's something that scares you, I'm not for you. And I'm not here to entertain your disappointment about my truth.
I'm stunned.
I love Miley Cyrus. I want her on the podcast.
Yeah,
so
Miley,
bad.
We want you on the pod.
Is there any truth that you feel like you've wrestled with? Or that you've reevaluated in your never? No, never. She's shaking her head. No,
I have been just completely honest with myself. Some of my earliest memories in the womb, I was just so true with myself.
Right, yeah.
Clear thoughts. No, I find, oh gosh, like recognizing that you're wrong or that can be so tough, but then being on the other side of it, those are the greatest moments I think I've had in my existence. And I've had so many phases in my life of ways that I identified with myself, things that I thought were true to me, and perhaps they were. Mm-hmm. But then in whatever form it took, whether that was time, experience, lots of therapy, I don't know, I guess it's like when a truth becomes concrete, like when truth becomes this thing that like stops you from seeing.
Do you have an example of something that you realized was wrong or a truth that you've had to redefine for yourself recently?
Well, the simplest one that comes to mind is social anxiety and feeling very clear that that was my path and my identity and what was destined for me because of my experience of, you know, you've been with me, you've held my hand and helped me breathe. My mom too has been on the other side of the phone while I've had to practice breathing, having, you know, been in what were overwhelming situations for me, being in large crowds of people, or it used to be just even with friends, social gatherings, certain things, I'd get so nervous. And then there was this moment after, you know, doing months on my first press tour, where I was spending lots of time talking to people and being in Q&As and speaking to theaters full of people, that there was a moment where I was, you know, holding the microphone and I said, you know, like, oh, well, I have social anxiety. And I noticed that it wasn't true. Like it came out of my mouth and it might have been true yesterday, to Miley's point, mm-hmm. But in that moment, it wasn't true anymore. It really blew my mind because I didn't know that that was possible. And I remember accounting it to just being on the planet long enough to be gifted that opportunity. I was like, wow, I've had enough time to rethink me.
Yeah. I had a totally a perception of what working as an actress was going to be like, what being on set would be like. And I think I thought that directors were going to be like the best acting coaches I could ever get. And that was very quickly disproven. I realized directors are not going to teach you how to act. They're going to make sure they have what they need for the day and move on. And very rarely does a director even touch on the acting choices. You show up as a fully fledged character with your decisions about how you're going to approach that scene. And for the most part, that's how you do it.
One trigger warning we'd like to flag before you continue on with the podcast is that we do get into a conversation on eating disorders. So if that is something that is a trigger for you, please take care of yourself.
Yeah, and know that we will link resources in the podcast description.
So with that said, here we go. It's about time for our first guest.
Glennon Doyle is an author, activist, and founder of Together Rising, an all-women-led nonprofit organization that has revolutionized grassroots philanthropy, raising over $28 million for women, families, and children in crisis. Her most recent book, Untamed, is the number one New York Times bestseller and has sold 2 million copies. Her books have shared her life through sobriety, parenting, activism, and love. Glennon, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to talk to you.
Guys, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I was so excited when Bree reached out.
So I'm trying to think of where to begin with this because we're tackling like a pretty big topic.
Yeah, I heard you guys. Where well, should we begin?
Exactly. So I think one great way to begin with this is just what we're talking about when we're talking about truth, because I think in Untamed, you talk a lot about truth and in truth in terms of the difference between truth and a belief.
Yes. I mean, it's just such an interesting time to be discussing truth also, because, you know, macro speaking, we've learned that it is important to understand that there are facts and there are unfacts, right? So there is an idea that we as a culture have to be committed on some level to a collective idea of what is true and what is not. And so when I'm talking about truth though in Untamed, I'm talking about a different thing, I think, and it's more of an internal idea. So we have this idea that there is right and wrong and good and bad and ways we should be or shouldn't be and that those things are true. Until you live for a while and you learn, you know, I'll never forget when I was trying to figure out what to do in my previous marriage in the wake of infidelity. And I had these two different groups in my life back then, which I kind of still do. And in one side was the Christian people, right? If it's a Venn diagram. And then the other circle was the feminist people. And these two circles just don't have a lot of overlap sometimes. It's just a tricky place to be, right? And so what was interesting is that in the aftermath of that, all of my feminist friends were telling me, okay, the right thing to do, what a good mother would do, what a strong woman should do is get the hell out. And all of my Christian friends were saying, the right thing to do, the true thing to do, what a strong woman would do, what you should do is stay. And this was an amazing experience for me because I realized, oh, good and bad, right and wrong, should and shouldn't aren't real. These are all just completely culturally constructed ideas from different groups that are kind of like the sheepdogs that keep everybody in the herd. So there's no there, right? It doesn't come from anywhere internal. It's all indoctrination, in other words. So my obsession at that point became, oh, if I keep just doing like what a particular group tells me is the right or wrong thing, I'm gonna live somebody else's life my entire life through. Right? So the idea was, how do we as people return, shut off all the voices of our indoctrination and our conditioning on the outside and return to whatever that thing is on the inside?
But how do you know when it's time to reevaluate what your truth is?
I don't know if it's a reevaluation of a truth if we're just constantly changing and constantly evolving. So it's just always checking in. You know, it's interesting, and I think it's cool that you wanted to talk to me about this because I've had such an interesting experience as a writer. Okay, if you're going to be a writer and write about your life, and then you're going to put those words onto paper, This is inherently terrible because if you're always evolving and always changing, there's always some old version of you out there. And people don't like it when other people change, right? Or when other people surrender to the constant evolving of life, which to me just feels like, okay, if we're doing anything down here, it has to be to continue to keep our eyes and hearts and minds open and constantly be taking in more and more of what's true so that we can constantly be becoming more a true, beautiful versions of ourselves over and over again forever, right? It's just a constant surrender to becoming as opposed to like what we sometimes do, which is a constant shutting down to not become, to not change. What I think is sort of the beginning of knowing would be discontent for me. Like this nagging inside me that's like, oh, this isn't right. This isn't enough. This isn't something I was meant for. This doesn't feel, you know, in Untamed, I tried to illustrate that discontent with Tabitha the cheetah, just like that idea of being caged. Like suddenly you feel like you're in a cage. It's like a restlessness. It's a longing. It's a desire for more or different. And I think that one of the reasons why we as women especially don't honor that discontent, which is beautiful. I think discontent is like proof that we haven't given up on ourselves. It's a nudge. It's a knock on the door that there's more, but we as women are trained to just never ask for more, mm-hmm. to just be grateful for whatever we have.
Right.
So we kind of deny that discontent because we feel like it's a sign we're not grateful enough.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard you talk about using imagination as like a portal to your truth. Like maybe if you're thinking, well, that's crazy, this thing I'm imagining, it could be actually the thing you're wild and the thing that you're supposed to be running towards, the way that like a cheetah would be in a cage looking around thinking, well, this is enough. This is all I know. But we all know a cheetah should be out in the wild.
I just want one aspect of this conversation about truth that feels so relevant to this moment. And it's something that I feel so confident that you can speak to because I've been in the activist trenches with you, is how to hold space for when people take the concept of an inner truth as being hate. That it's like, oh, well, my truth is that I hate this group of people or I hate this person. And how do we hold space for that as part of this conversation? Like, is that a truth? Like, is hatefulness part of truth?
My hunch, and based on experience with all different sorts of groups that divide or use fear or have fear has been used on them, right, to indoctrinate, is that hate comes in from indoctrination, that hate is always taught. And so whatever is taught to us, you know, one of my favorite quotes is Walt Whitman, we are supposed to re-examine everything we've been taught in a book, in a religion, in a school, by a family member, and dismiss whatever insults our own soul. I think that hate is just something that is fear-based and is always, when you trace it back to its origins, is always, always taught. It's part of conditioning. It's part of training. And so one of the, Brittany Packnett Cunningham taught me this strategy, which has only worked like 100% of the times since she taught it to me, but is that when there is a hateful idea brought up, one of the best strategies you can use is to just continue to question it. Just like, what do you mean by that? Like, tell me more. Like, how questioning hateful indoctrination always ends to confusion from the person spewing it because it's not truth. So there's no end to it, right? So if you continue to ask questions, it never holds up because the thing that holds up at the end is truth. When you confront a hateful idea with something that is an equal and opposite measure, it strengthens. And when you ask it questions, it just kind of slinks because it was never true to begin with. There is no hateful idea that stands up to questioning. So I don't have any room for that, zero.
Yes, thank you for that. You put it so well. So I know that you've redefined yourself numerous times now, and I feel like there's this fear, this innate fear in me that if I'm going to change, I'll disappoint people. And I really love what you talk about in your book. And I was just wondering if you would touch on kind of like living with the fact that your truth might be disappointing to someone and how to live with that.
Okay. So Jesse, here's what I think we have to do. Your job is to disappoint as many people as humanly possible throughout your life, okay? So that you never disappoint yourself, as many people as it takes forever. What I want women to do is make disappointing other people something that they celebrate. Like, this is actually our goal, because it's terrifying, Jesse, when you think about that word. Like, think about what we're doing when we're disappointing people, which means we have appointed them as the boss and guiding force of our lives.
Oh God.
When we talk about living through indoctrination, or that's the worst thing we can do. Like, we actually can wake up one day and we can be 80 years old and realize we appointed everybody else the boss of our lives, the guide of our lives, and never appointed ourselves. So what I'm saying is, we have to stop being afraid of disappointing people and actually go through our lives and systematically say, okay, who do I need to disappoint today? Who do I need to disappoint tomorrow? And by the way, it's almost always our parents. Okay. Like, when Tish said to me, I said, you have to disappoint everybody, disappoint everybody. And she said, even you? And I said, oh my God, sweet Jesus, especially me. The best way we can honor our parents is to trust the women they raised.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it needs to become a spiritual practice, disappointing people, like every day on your checklist. Who do I get to disappoint today?
So funny. It's something that my therapist has actually been saying to me. He was like, I'd love it for the next time you're on set that you walk away at the end of the day and go, okay, one person didn't like me. I disappointed one person. Like, yes, good for you. Because especially, you know, being on set where it's this team effort, it's so easy for me to get into other people's business and just start to be like, oh, well, they're uncomfortable and I'm not doing enough for them, or da 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 da. And then I go home and I feel terrible. It's funny how in the story of needing to care for and be for everyone, it doesn't include me. It's like every single person on this planet except my body.
And if we need proof that we are growing inside of a patriarchal culture, we can just look to the fact that the ultimate compliment we can give a woman is that she is selfless. Think about that word. Like, what we want from you ladies, if you could just please aim to be without a self, that would be great. If you could just cease to exist in every single way, that then we will pat you on the head, right? Yeah. Good Lord. I find myself most comfortable with and admiring most women who have a very strong sense of self.
It sounds like you confront a lot of things that you may have otherwise considered to be the truth, and you're able to figure out what your truth is. And I'm wondering, is there anything that you're actively trying to unlearn right now?
No, I've nailed it. I'm done.
Well, it was great talking to you.
Congratulations. I'm fixed. You found the one. It's me. You found the one. Okay, so here's the truth about that, what I'm trying to figure out. And I actually don't know if I'm ever going to figure this out. I kind of think I might be 90 years old and good at other things, but have never figured this out. And that's the whole food and body thing. It's so embarrassing to me because I am a fierce feminist and I feel like I should have this figured out. And I became bulimic when I was 10. And so food and body stuff have always been, I just don't get it. It's just unbelievably depressing to me because I'm like 45 years old and there was just the 30-year-old version of me was positive that I would have this nailed at the time I was 45. But I'm thinking about being open to trying again to figure it out, right? Like, I'm thinking about, I don't know, going back to therapy or starting over, because that is like one of the truths that is just always there. So anyway, I'm sure I'll have it figured out by next Tuesday.
Thank you for sharing that with us. That's, you're definitely not alone about.
Yes. And I think it's something that I hope we continue to talk about on this podcast, because it's one of my reasons for like starting a YouTube channel and doing the podcast and doing these things is to, I mean, I literally play a superhero, and it's tough when you walk on the street and people are like, Captain Marvel. And you're like, it starts to become confusing where you're like, oh God, like at all times, I'm supposed to be able to save the world. And the humility to be in practice and to say, like, I am doing my part just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And there are avenues where I can be of service, where I am so clear, where I can show up, where I feel like I have 2 feet on the ground. And then there's some stuff that I'm talking to my therapist about. Mm-hmm. And that's what life is for me right now. You know, you kind of how our conversation began, Glennon, was because you sent me Untamed, and you had attached a note to it that I didn't understand until I opened the book, and it said, you know, you are a cheetah. And it came to me at a time where I felt really low. I was feeling really incapable and unsure. And I saw it and was like, you don't know me. Like, I'm going to therapy twice a week right now. And I read the book and it was just, I felt like, oh, of course I am the cheetah. We all are. And sometimes it's like a roundabout path of getting still, or of hearing someone else share their story of stillness to go, oh yeah, mine, that connects us. So I want to say thank you, because I still have it. I have it on my desk because it's like, I can't let it go. Like, it's just been this reminder. And I feel that that story and many others in your book are like that for many people.
Oh my God, thank you for that.
All right. When is it okay, if ever, to lie? And what do you lie about?
Oh my God.
She did it.
I do worse things than this, but this little thing felt so terrible. And I'm sure it has to do with my eating stuff. But I got these two, if Abby hears the story, she actually won't forgive me. I might not let her listen to this podcast. So we had two juices left, and one of them was expired and one of them wasn't. And you guys, I switched the tops of the juices so that I would get the good one, so that I would get the like non-expired juice. And then I gave Abby the expired juice. Guys, it was this moment where I was like, you are actually a bad person. This is the woman you love. And I was like, no, I'm really tired and I just need whatever this juice has in it. So I need the fresh one.
Before we go, I want to know if there's anything in particular, if there's like a question or something that you'd like to leave anyone who's listening to think about in terms of connecting with themselves or finding their truth. And then maybe where you go with that, because I think that we've kind of circled around the activism piece, and I'll just throw out for myself that there's been many times that for me in connecting with my truth, it's then meant putting that into action. Mm. It's showing up for others. And sometimes it's showing up for myself and sometimes it's showing up for others.
We as a culture are trained, conditioned to think that happiness is what we should go for, that the truth is that we should all be happy. And so we're human beings and we're all the things. We're not happy all the time. And so consumer culture tells us we should be happy. So we think that we have to fix that about ourselves. What I would say to you is that if you don't know what to do, if you don't know what your truth is, I think a really good question is, what breaks my heart? What is it in the world that breaks my heart? Okay. Because what women tell me over and over again is that what they want is purpose and they want connection. When we get into this like esoteric, like, what is our truth? Like, woo, 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 what is the truth? Like, I don't know. I don't freaking know. But I know when I am brave enough to read an article that is about, you know, children being separated at the border still or whatever it is. And I'm like, shit, like my heart, it breaks my heart open. And I use that as a signal to get my ass to work.
Oh, thank you so much, Glennon. I can't.
Thank you too. I think we fixed the world.
I think we did it. Yep. Game over.
They should be done now. They should be fine now.
Love you.
All my love. Love you too. Bye, ladies.
That was awesome. She's so cool and so smart.
Wow.
Okay, so I've prepared this true or false trivia quiz for you.
Oh, Lord.
True or false? Babies have more bones than adults.
Excuse me?
True or false?
So wait, if I say false, that means they have less bones? We get more bones? Or is it just...
No, it's just...
I just say same bones?
Same bones?
Yeah, got the same bones.
Well, you're supposed to say true or false.
False.
True.
No.
It's true. An adult has 206 bones, but a newborn baby has nearly 300 bones in her body. This is because babies have more flexible cartilage in the body. As a child grows, some of that cartilage hardens and turns to bone, and some bones fuse together.
I'm shook.
So you're born with more bones than you have currently.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. True or false? Sandwich is named after a person.
Yes.
True.
Yes, that's true. I know that. You it's like that? Lord Sandwich or something.
His name was John Montague, and he was the first Earl of Sandwich.
Yes, Earl of Sandwich. Yes, I did know about that for some reason.
And he preferred to have his meat between two pieces of bread.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that I don't know about bones, but I do know about the Earl of Sandwich.
We love a sandwich. True or false? Olympic gold medals are made of silver.
No. Please false. Please false.
True.
Unbelievable.
It's true.
No.
The last series of medals made of solid gold were awarded at the 1912 Summer Olympics in Stockholm.
Are they like plated in gold or what's happening?
Yes, they're plated in gold. True or false? Australia is wider than the moon.
Come on.
True or false?
How dare you ask me this question and make me look like a goddamn fool?
Yeah. True.
Okay, good.
The moon sits at 3,400 kilometers in diameter, while Australia's diameter from east to west is almost 4,000 kilometers. True or false? The unicorn is the national animal of Scotland.
Yes.
Mistress of unicorns.
I'm the Earl.
True or false? I am the most beautiful and talented woman the world has ever known.
Oh, true.
True. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You have completed the true or false questionnaire quiz. I don't know if you noticed this, but all of them were true because I'm not going to waste our time on this podcast about truth with falsehoods.
Incredible touch, Jesse.
Thanks.
Okay, it's time for our next guest. Dr. Spiros Mihalakis is a mathematical physicist and manager of outreach at Caltech's Institute for Quantum Information and Matter. His current research focuses on the mathematical foundations of quantum physics. He has consulted in numerous films, including Marvel's Ant-Man and also Ant-Man and the Wasp. He is the person that I like to bring to a dinner party if I want to blow everyone's minds.
I mean, you're blowing my mind just by having him on the podcast.
So excited to have him here. Spiros, thank you so much for being here.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for being here, Spiros. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you two doing?
We're good. So we're here to talk about the super light topic, truth.
Yes. Nice and light. I love it.
So I'm curious to start from, you know, where you sit in your profession. What do you define as truth?
Okay, then. So there's two different levels, I guess, for truth. The first one, and I think you're asking the right person to answer this because I sit right at the intersection of mathematics and physics. And mathematics is not quite a science, right? So there is a different answer to what is truth from the sense of mathematics. And it's closer to what logic and inference from logic, these syllogisms of Aristotle and others have given us for thousands of years. And their truth is the idea that if you have some axioms, some foundations upon which you're going to build everything else, right? That two parallel lines never intersect. You know, the sum of the angles of a triangle is 180 degrees, stuff like that. That once you start from something like this, and then you use what is known as modus ponens, it is the law of inference, then from this certain axiomatic truths, these foundational self-evident truths, then you get new ones. But in physics, it's different. Physics is a science, and it's one of the most hardcore of the sciences out there, quantum physics even more so. And their truth has a lower standard, even though it's still pretty insane, like to be able to say, like, we found a new particle, right? Or this is a new law of physics, or we know this for sure. You need to do something that is called, like, well, first of all, the observations. You need to do so many observations. And to do that, you need to get to a place of what is called five sigma. These are five standard deviations away from some expected truth. You need to be sure like up to 1 in 3.5 million chances that you haven't made a mistake. So that's what truth is from the both a mathematical point of view and the scientific point of view.
But what about the quantum realm?
What about the quantum realm? I see.
What's true in the quantum realm?
Yes, the source code of all of truth, right? The quantum realm is a place beyond space and time as we know it. And it is real, right? This is exactly where what we study when we do quantum mechanics. And at Caltech, where I work, you know, there's a lot of experimentalists and theorists that try to understand how to manipulate the laws of the quantum realm itself to make amazing things happen, like quantum computers happen and other things like that. And it seems that anything that it has predicted has come to pass, which is insane, okay? Like quantum teleportation of particles, check, right? Like being at two places at the same time, check. Yeah, yep, Did I drop a bomb? I'm sorry.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean that we are starting to understand what makes up space and time itself. We thought up until recently that space and time were kind of like fundamental constructs, right? As Immanuel Kant, like, you know, thought of them, they are the fabric upon which all the other things play out. And very recently, something amazing has happened in physics. You know, we've rocked our own world. We no longer think that space and time are fundamental, that there is a substrate to them. And the thing that gives rise to like distance and time has to do more with the strength of that connection than any distance that exists a priori. It's pretty amazing, right? It's like actually pretty poetic, I think, because you know how you feel about someone, no matter how far apart they are from you, and it feels like they're right next to you. It's like it transcends kind of like space and time. Whether you read a great book, someone that you love and they're like far away, but then it feels like they're right next to you. Okay, like you can almost like hear their thoughts. This is how everything works. It's pretty crazy.
I'm so confused. So let me see if I got this straight. We're all connected even if we're not in the same room. So am I connected to my future self? Like when I have feelings about who I'm going to be 4 months from now, am I actually like?
It is insane. Like, you know, if you think of how crazy it really is, then you know, probably need to take like a few breaths and recenter, because there is no such thing as time also as we think of it, right? There is no such thing as like the future or the past. Think of time as a network of connections itself. Kind of like in a movie, right? If you have a single movie, you can go from frame to frame and you can even go backwards, right? You can rewind. We can't do that in real life. And there is a fundamental reason why, which we should be able to overcome at some point as well, right? But when you're moving in time, you're not moving just forward and backwards. You're actually moving in an infinite dimensional space. It's like, again, a network where you're allowed to choose any frame you want. You don't have to just play the movie that you were given. You could just take frames from a different movie, splice them in, and then move from there. You can actually start the movie from the end, take the first half and move it after the end, right? Reverse like the order. All of this stuff should be possible. We just haven't figured out a way yet to do it. There is no such thing as like one future. Like we get to decide, I guess, in a very real way what that is. We have absolute freedom. And the more we learn how to occupy different points of view, the more we learn how to move through time the same way that we're learning how to move through space.
Yes. Okay. So take a breath. I'm breathing. I've had this conversation with him a couple times. So I'm like, yes. So, okay. Just to pull back for a second, because I feel like it's so crazy, right? But if you connect it to our earlier conversation, and even if you're in any sort of spiritual practice, what's wild is that this exists in that realm. Mm-hmm. Like you could take this just purely poetic, what he's talking about with these frames, it's like there's so much happening in a moment that we aren't seeing, and therefore we are creating the connections between. Am I right in that?
Absolutely. And yes, that's well done, Bree.
Thank you. Right.
We're discussing truth. Let's go back to truth with a capital T. Right? There is no such thing. There's only a single truth that there is no other truth.
My mind is blown.
I know, I know. And to me, it's just what I love about this is that it changes nothing. Like, it changes everything and it changes nothing. So for folks that are listening and are trying to take your research and put it into their life, even if you just take it at like the poetic level of what you're saying, that like it takes all of us with our point of view, with our ability to learn to have empathy and see outside of ourselves, create this thing. What is it that you would love for listeners to take away from your work? Not necessarily from like a mathematical level, but from heart level.
In fact, from the mathematical level, there wouldn't be much to take away, because the place where I am currently with my research, my actual, you know, scientific research, has taken me directly to whatever you would call the heart level. When you see that everything, all the hardcore technology we've ever built, right, is just like many, many layers of just relationships upon all this stuff, and different points of view kind of coalescing, coming together and having a dialectic like we're doing right now, what I would tell the listeners is that be more like Jesse and Bree.
Oh, did you hear that? Okay. Will you say it again one more time just for clarity? Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, be more like Jesse and Bree. I really mean this. This is learning lots. What are you doing here, right? What is so important about this? You're trying to have a conversation, okay? I already told you something like insane, that there is no such thing, as far as I know, right, as truth with a capital T. So it's one thing to go for the pursuit of knowledge, but I would suggest that people go for the pursuit of understanding. It's as simple as that, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you explained all this stuff before, it didn't sound that simple, but... But
yeah, when you boil it down to just be like us, it's much easier to digest.
Of course, yes, just be like us.
My question is there a single truth that you wish everyone could know?
Yes, I think it is that to know, you have to look inside, not just outside. You have to look inside. What assumptions have you made because of who you were growing up, who affected you, right? What relationships you formed? What assumptions have you made about the world and how it can be? And are you willing to let them go without losing yourself? Are you willing to have a conversation with somebody from the other side and not think of the conversation as like, I'm hoping by putting myself out there that I will be able to convince them? No, right? It's much harder than that, and actually much more fun, I think, if you do it right. The conversation is the answer. The fact that you're in the same table connecting as human beings is the answer. Like I've had conversations with people from the Flat Earth Society, and they have been wonderful human beings. They had me over for hours, like, you know, they brought me wine, all that stuff, answered their questions, asked about me, asked about them. I brought them to Caltech, we had lunch. And at some point, one of the leaders was like, I don't even care anymore whether the Earth is flat or not. I just want to do science with you, right? I just want to hang out. Like, I want to know what's going on. Every time we isolate ourselves from others, we are doing a disservice to both ourselves and to the others, right? We carry so much wisdom. It is insane. It's such a waste to close ourselves off and say, like, I can't because I know what is true, and this person is going to throw me off if I connect to them. No, I guarantee it. I'm a scientist. Trust me. Okay. Go out there and connect with the universe and the world. It's worth it.
Wow, that's such a beautiful way to end. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to have spoken with you.
It was such a pleasure. Ladies, have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
I loved that. I was so lost for chunks of it. And I was like, stay focused, stay in it. But it was really challenging to wrap my head around some of those concepts. But the thing that stuck out to me the most was how connected what he was saying, how connected what he was saying was with what Glennon was saying about how there is no real truth. There's just constant evolving beliefs and definitions, and that even that isn't solid. Like, to hear from a scientist that knowledge isn't that helpful and that understanding is far more productive, I really loved. I think that's such a valuable lesson.
Yes, yes. And that was part of what I was hoping we would gain from these two conversations today, is like, is that even at the like the quantum level, which is like, I'm not gonna lie, like I understand like part of it. Mm-hmm. I understand it in poetry. We're still even at like the pinnacle of math and of science and of what we're calling like intelligence and knowledge. It all boils down to being curious, being open to being wrong, revising when you've made, you know, a claim and realizing, oh, whoa, like that's not true. And what he's doing is like, he's literally questioning the basic fabric of our reality. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's just so crazy to even have the thought. Like, I think up until I had dinner with him, I don't think I'd been like, well, there's time and there's space. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have been like, but is there?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, that is really, that's heroic to me to question those things, have the courage to do that.
Oh, there's so much. There's so much there.
Oh, yeah. I do feel like we've come a long way since the beginning of this podcast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I feel like I came into it with a very, you know, I had a concept of what we were going to get from each person. I thought Glennon would talk about feeling your truth and your truth and who you are to yourself and how that can change over time. And I thought Spiros would come in and talk about factual truth, how you prove a truth, what is a scientific truth. And I feel like now I've witnessed both of those conversations merge in this really beautiful way where truth is an ever expanding concept that never gets defined fully. It's something that we're always working on. We're always redefining. And to get to the truth is a process that we'll live for the rest of our lives. Like what Glennon was saying about how you're never like a fixed person. You've done all the work and you're done.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely learned some things today. Hope everybody listening did as well.
Lastly, I think we have to talk about fan submissions because we've said this a couple of times, but we want to make it perfectly clear. We want things outside of just written word, like art submissions, songs, stories you might have, pictures, like anything creative. We want to get to include you in this podcast.
Absolutely. And also, if you're listening to this on iTunes, please leave us a review and we may read it. If it's good,
and if it's bad.
If it's bad, yeah, we may read it too.
I like a bad review.
Yeah, I mean, but don't do it on purpose just to get attention.
And yeah, we really can't wait to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us. Aw, sorry to say goodbye, but we'll see you again.
Have a good rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.
Learning lots with Bree and Jessie.